saw my baby then. She was stretched out on that long white table, so young, so sweet, so fair. Well, let her go, God bless her.
Oh, God. Right? Be like Rock'em Sock'em Robots up in this bitch.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Hauntheads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. I am your host, Janine Mercer, and I am joined here, as always, by...
Mimi Steven.
So what's been going on with you?
Just more of the same.
Oh, yeah?
Just stressed.
But you're painting.
Yeah.
Which is good. And your show is coming up.
Actually, oh, no. I'm not doing a show for a while.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know when. I have a couple things I like.
Yeah.
But a couple things that I liked while I was doing it and then not so thrilled with now.
Well, I mean, that's true of a lot of things that we do. You know, yeah. like I took all of my collectibles out of their safed closet and stacked them up out here because I was like, I have this huge collection that I want to enjoy and I want to, you know, be able to sit with it
right. And
spend time with it. And then I started freaking out because I was like, the sun is getting in this room. It's fading all these boxes. Mm-hmm. And if the boxes get faded, then that means that they're not going to be worth as much.
Right.
And if they're not worth as much, then why am I doing it? And then I thought, well, if I'm doing it just for money, then I'm doing it for the wrong reasons. But there's also a lot of them that I really like. So.
Are you taking pictures of everyone? And
yeah, I have a Pop Price Guide account. So it tells me from day to day. I don't really pay too terribly much attention to, like, the prices that are on there, because mm-hmm. the prices often get, like, little weird, little wonky. But, yeah, I'll take a picture of, like, a new pop that I get or whatever and post it on Facebook. So, I mean, I can go back through my pictures and find everything if I want to, or I can go on Pop Price Guide and,
okay. You
know, update it as I need to, but... But yeah, so you've been painting, but you're not enjoying what you're doing, and you're stressed.
Yes.
This was supposed to be like summer of fun.
I know.
I even said on the blog, hey, you know, we've been enjoying summer fun. No, actually, we've just been stressed.
Yeah. But you still like your job, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's fine. It's fine. It pays the bills. My MFA program's going good.
Good.
That's going good. I am having fun with the writing that I'm doing. I'm doing a lot of police procedural stuff.
Oh.
That I'm really having a lot of fun with and enjoying doing the research and putting in the work. So.
Cool.
Yep. So that's been good.
I like your sticker, Need to Impeach.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a, there's some sort of a, let's see. Okay, so there's a sticker on my laptop that says Need to Impeach, and it's a peach with Donald Trump's horrible toupee.
Mm-hmm.
And it says needtoimpeach.com. So if you guys want to go and grab a sticker for your laptop or your car or whatever, they have a lot of different designs, but I just like the punniness of
that
one.
Are we on air already?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There are often times that I just record, and then I'll go back and I'll cut out random shit and I'll put random shit back in. I have like a whole folder just filled with snippets in case I need to fill space. So yeah, sometimes I'll just pull stuff out and put it back in, whatever. It works out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've also got my Sasquatch on there.
Mm-hmm.
I've got my Hawkins Power and Light from Stranger Things. That sticker on there.
And a butterfly with skull.
Death's Head Moth from Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Love that movie.
It was a good movie.
Very good.
I feel like an episode doesn't go by that we don't say. That was a good movie.
I haven't seen a movie in a long time.
I haven't either. Honestly, the only part of that movie that really sticks out in my mind... Okay, so there are two parts. The part where he's, like, dancing and he's got his dick tucked.
Yeah.
And then the part where he's like in the van and he's Ted Bundying it up, trying to get her to push, the, mm-hmm. you know, pull the sofa into the, because he's got the cast or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't it weird, though, looking at him in shows like The Closer and other things?
Oh, my God. I can't watch him in anything else.
So you see him in that, and then you go back to, he's always going to be that
character. He's always that guy. Yeah, he's always that guy. You're like, dude, can you give me tips on growing moths? Please. Can you tell me? Tell me how you do that.
Yeah, he was really good.
Yeah. Or how to make clothing out of human skin, I suppose. Yeah. He was good at that, too. But, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was a good movie. So, I was telling Mimi that I sprained my wrist trying to open a gate. And for any of you out there that are over 35, I am sure that there is somebody out there who feels my pain. And is like, yeah, I do that all the time too. I was trying to do a simple fucking task. Just like, you know, how did you break your arm? I was cracking nuts at Christmas. Like, it's just random, you know.
It happens.
So anyway, that was the thing that happened. Let's see what else. I have gotten many, 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 many submissions of paranormal and creepy stories from people on Reddit. Also people who have sent just random emails to hauntheadscast@gmail.com. They're all really super cool. I am double checking all of them to make sure that they're not creepypastas or they haven't been previously published somewhere else by someone else. So if you're thinking, hey, I'm going to get on the air and I'm going to submit crap from creepypasta or whatever, don't do it, because I'm going to find out. And then I'm going to be mad. And then I'm going to be disappointed. Which is even worse than being mad.
Aww.
Being disappointed. Aww. Didn't you hate that when you were a kid? And your parents were like, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Which I use on my kids all the time.
Oh, God.
It doesn't
work. Don't perpetuate like that shit, Mimi.
It doesn't work the way it worked for my parents.
Oh, it was terrible. My grandfather used to tell me that all the time, and my grandfather has sad eyes.
Oh.
So when he said it, you knew. Like, oh, shit.
The problem with me is I look at my youngest and I just smile. At what he does, I just smile.
Yeah.
So it doesn't work so well with
my kids.
Well,
know, the young ones get a pass anyway.
Yeah.
You know, the babies.
Yeah.
The babies of the family.
So he wanted to write a story. He wanted to make one up and write it for Haunted. I'm like, no, I look.
Oh, he wanted to falsify a paranormal account?
He's like, oh, I could tell you some stories.
Oh, my God. Terrible.
So, yeah.
That little shitter. You better not. Fuck it. No, in my luck.
No.
No, in my luck, I'll go into the email and be like, oh, my God, this is an awesome story. And it'll be from him.
Yeah.
And I won't know. Don't you dare.
Yeah.
Don't you dare. So, today, we have some interesting, creepy shit for you guys. Mimi has, what do you have? What is it?
Well, I titled it, The Wanderings of Honest Abe.
Honest Abe. Who apparently haunted a bunch of shit after he died.
Yeah, he still is,
Didn't they parade him through the streets after he died, and they put his corpse in like a something and drag him? No, that wasn't a thing.
I don't know.
Was that Kennedy? No,
I don't really maybe know not.
Yet. I don't know. I don't need to know U.S. history.
I wouldn't think they would. I mean, he would have smelled bad.
Well, no, because he was surrounded by flowers.
Well, that's true.
And probably dipped liberally in patchouli oil.
Ooh.
Yeah. Because, you know, that's what that was for. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a meme on Facebook that was like, if you're not deceased and decaying, don't come into this office wearing patchouli oil.
Yeah. Oh, I think I saw that.
Or something like that. It was funny. I don't know. I had a good laugh at it. But, you know, I mean, it,
for the same reason that brides carried bouquets. Because, you know, they used to take a bath, and then it would be months, and they wouldn't take another bath.
Right.
So when they got married, they'd carry a bouquet of flowers to mask the smell.
So that's why they carry a bouquet.
Yeah. Just a font of useless information. Yes, that would make for one stinky, disgusting wedding night. I don't even want to think about it, no. And I'm not gonna. All right.
I wouldn't have done very well back then.
No, you don't think so?
No, I have to shower every day or I can't get
oh,
motivated.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we're getting the tub surround in the bathroom redone because apparently the popular color now is like this kind of jade green color. So it kind of looks like the old Coke bottles. That glass.
Okay.
So we're getting the whole surround done in that. Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I can't shower up here, so I have to shower all the way down in the basement. And it's cold. And it's not, I mean, the shower is huge, so that's nice, but. So there's some stressors here and there. Like the plumber was supposed to come today. I was the one who made the plumbing appointment. So somebody is shitty with me because I was supposed to make the plumbing appointment and I totally did, but the lady didn't put it in the book. So now he has to come tomorrow.
Yep. That's stinky though.
It is what it is.
Shit happens.
Shit happens. All right. Okay, so the piece that I have this week is on Penhurst Asylum. It's located in Pennsylvania. Was a pretty active, busy asylum in its day. It took very little time at all for it to become overcrowded and to become a cesspit, which is generally what happens. You know, we get this idea in our heads that we're going to buy this nice new shiny plot of land and we're going to put this brand new beautiful asylum on it and we're going to say, okay, now we're going to fill it with 500 beds and we're going to genuinely help people get better. And then the next thing you know, there's like 2,800 people in this space that was only, you know, there for 500 to begin with. And now they're like, well, but we also want to put orphans in there and criminals and whatever. And, you know, and then they're talking about eugenics and, like, how they don't want different races to be having sex in there and, like, whatever. Which wouldn't have been a problem in the first place. Not necessarily the different races having sex. I don't give a shit about that. But, like, people, like, patients raping other patients because they're in such close proximity and there's no way to separate them. So yeah, the piece this week is a little darker than normal. I think that my work tends to get darker when I start to deal more with human beings.
Okay.
Which is really interesting because I can sit here and I can talk about, you know, all these terrible urban legends, you know, like the Hook Man urban legend and, you know, this guy going around with a hook for a hand and he's gutting people. But it's still fiction. And there's something about human beings and the disgusting, despicable things that human beings do to other human beings in the interest of, quote-unquote, helping them that they wouldn't necessarily do to themselves, to help themselves, quote-unquote. They wouldn't want to live in this place, but right. They force other people to live in this place under the guise of care and asylum. Which, again, I don't know why in the fuck they called them asylums. Because there was nothing relaxing about it.
Right.
At all. There was no, like, protection. There was no rehabilitation. It sounds nice. But, I mean, you know, you can make a shit sandwich and call it a whoopie pie. That doesn't make it a whoopie pie. It's still a fucking shit sandwich. You know? And I understand that sometimes we have to eat that shit sandwich, but you know, like, you don't make other people eat it then. You made it, you eat the damn thing yourself. Anyway, whatever. And I will now take my soapbox and put it over here. There you go.
Alrighty.
So who wants to go first? Who went first last time? I don't remember.
Did I go first? It doesn't matter.
Do you want to flip a coin?
Sure.
No, you don't care?
I don't care if I go first.
I don't think I have a... Do you have a coin?
No.
We have no props. What is a podcast without props? I don't even know what we would flip. I mean, I'm about ready to flip this table.
Okay. Rock, scissors,
paper. Oh, here. Okay. Okay, so, all right.
Rock, scissors, paper.
Oh. Oh, now you're cheating. 1, 2, 3. What? Did you do rock?
I did rock.
So what is it? Is it best 2 out of 3? Paper covers rock. Okay, so right. 1 and 1. Oh. Paper covers rock. Okay, right. So what? I get to go first or I get to say you go first? It doesn't matter to you?
Okay, right. You choose. Winner's choice.
Okay. I will go first.
Okay, good.
How about that?
You have a better story.
So I am once again on an asylum kick. Again, still not sure why they called them that. Not true. Lie. And I've been really digging into the history of Pennhurst Asylum in Spring City, Pennsylvania. Once called the Eastern State Institution for the Feeble-Minded and Epileptic. Very specific. The original structure sat on 112 acres of land and was built in the Jacobean Revival style, or Jacobean style. From Wikipedia, in architecture, the style's main characteristics are flattened or cusped Tudor arches, lighter stone trims with windows around the doors, carved brick detailing, steep roof gables, terracotta brickwork, balustrades, parapets, pillars, supporting porches, and high chimneys, as in the Elizabethan style. So, without getting into too much terrible detail of this Jacobean style, let me just cut to the chase and tell you that the place is beautiful. It really is. It's a structure that, when you walk around the outside, it's awe-inspiring. The fact that they decided to create the space in that way, using this particular form of architecture. A lot of the asylums of the time embraced the Kirkbride plan, which was basically that they would have all these wings and they had all these windows and they were all open on all sides or whatever. This place was more laid out like a palace.
Okay.
A very interesting choice.
Well, the picture you have is very
pretty. Mm-hmm. And, like, the little, you know, the little bell tower up at the top. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, just all of these little details. I think when they originally were going to open this place, they had every intention of making it an asylum. A place for people to go and to heal and be rehabilitated and be made, you know, productive members of society. Unfortunately, you know, the best of intentions often end in dismay and frustration. So... with that said, let me also point out that Pennhurst was a dumping ground for all manner of afflicted individuals. Patients were separated according to sex, but they were also categorized by whether or not they were epileptic, whether or not they'd had dental care. There were many adult patients, but they were all called children, regardless of that fact. Patients were also separated according to race because eugenics. Segregation and sterilization was their bag. As I move forward in this piece, I would like to state that the opinions that are expressed within this article are not necessarily my own. I have taken reference material from other places. I've noted those on the blog if you want to check them out. But I certainly don't condone a lot of this language. It's here strictly for the purpose of serving history, because I feel that if we don't accept that history and represent that history, then we're doomed to repeat it. So I just think it's important to kind of put it out there, you know. So in 1903, the Pennsylvania legislature authorized the creation of the Eastern State Institution for the Feeble-Minded and Epileptic, and a commission was organized to take into consideration the number and status of the feeble-minded and epileptic persons in the state and determine a placement for construction to care for these residents. The commission discovered that 1,146 feeble-minded persons in insane hospitals and 2,627 in almshouses, county care hospitals, reformatories, and prisons who were in immediate need of specialized institutional care. So Pennhurst was built to serve that need. The legislation stated that the buildings would be in two groups, one for educational and one for an industrial department, and then one for the custodial or asylum department. The institution was required to accommodate no fewer than 500 inmates or patients with room for additions. Now, in Pennhurst, if you were able, if they deemed you mentally capable, you were basically assigned to a particular job or a particular task. So there were all these different workplaces that you could go to. So there was like a wood shop. There was a place where they would make mattresses. All manner of things that you could go and do if you had the wherewithal to do it. Those were the lucky ones. Those people that were able to go and get out of the asylum and actually go to these workhouses and spend time outside of their rooms, these very crowded conditions. So they were actually very lucky. The asylum accepted its first patient on November 23rd, 1908.
Did they have rooms for like two people or three people, or was
it was closer to the end. It was honestly more like a dormitory style.
Okay.
I mean, you would have rooms where there would be 30 people crammed into a room. They had several rooms for actual children, because as I said, they were all considered children. But for actual children, there were cribs that were essentially cages. And these children would spend the bulk of their day, sometimes all day, locked in these cages. It looked like a crib, but it had a top, and they could lock them in there. And there were so many kids that didn't have the ability to walk by the time they were like 5 years old. They had to be taught how to walk at five, because they spent all of this time just lying in these cribs. You know, it's really, yeah. It's pretty despicable. Like I said, they accepted the first patient November 23rd, 1908. And very, very quickly, roughly 4 years later, they became overcrowded. Conditions within the asylum quickly declined due to the huge influx of patients. And the administration was under pressure to accept immigrants, orphans, and even criminals. Children aged between 6 months and 5 years were housed in one ward. And as I said, many of these children were never taught to walk or care for themselves. They just basically lived in these cribs that kept them penned in. It was basically a recipe for not only disaster, but also a great way to create a future haunted location. You know, pain, suffering, loneliness, that was Pennhurst. So, upon opening and admitting patient number one, the hospital was basically a gleaming jewel in the crown of the administrators who hoped that Pennhurst would house and seat and serve the needs of a very vulnerable population. The long tables in the dining hall were covered in white linen tablecloths. The rooms were made bright with fresh paint, large windows. Day rooms offered comfortable chairs, the opportunities to play the piano, to relax. Within a very short time, though, overcrowding, cuts to funding, Pennhurst became a horror rather than a refuge that it was meant to be for its children. So, in a four-part docuseries on Pennhurst that was shown on NBC in 1968, Bill Baldini went inside to expose the living conditions and the operational problems within. Baldini sat down and interviewed a doctor at Pennhurst, and Baldini finds out that problem patients are consistently drugged so that they can be handled more easily, and children of delinquent parents and low educational background who are brought to the asylum by authorities or officials are being classified as mentally disabled. So just because a child doesn't progress in school past grade 3 and has to drop out because his parents were arrested or his parents are delinquents and don't make him go to school. That does not make him mentally disabled.
Right.
That means he has a third grade reading level. That doesn't mean he needs to go to a mental institution. It means that he needs to go to some place that is going to teach him how to read and how to write and how to at a higher level. They told the story of this one boy. His name was Johnny. I'm sure that wasn't his real name. But Baldini sat down with him and he basically said, you know, like, do you like it here at Pennhurst? And the boy was like, no, like, absolutely not. I don't want to be here. You know, he asked him, like, what he does while he's there all day. He talks to the other people on his ward. Well, the other people on his ward are much lower level IQ than he is. So you're talking about, like, he said, I think that Baldini said he was somewhere in the 60s, IQ-wise. The people that he was put in with were, like, 20 to 30 IQ. So the level of conversation that he could have with these other individuals was not very high, was not very complicated. This was done basically as a punishment. So Johnny apparently was acting up on his ward, and this doctor decided that he was going to take Johnny and put him in a different ward with people who are more profoundly disabled so that he wouldn't have the ability to converse with other people. I don't know why you would do that. That seems like such a monstrous and terrible thing to do to another human being. Why the fuck would you do that?
Right.
But this apparently was this doctor's idea of rehabilitation. This is how he's going to fix Johnny. And Baldini says, well, but doctor, don't you think that if he got out of here and he got into programs that would teach him how to read and write and whatever and, you know, interact with other people at a higher level, don't you think that that would be more beneficial? And the doctor says, well, yeah, but, I mean, he's here. So that's where they left him. So that's where he's going to stay. And it's just so, it's so heartbreaking. It's just so profoundly cruel that I can't. And the look on this doctor's face, I can't even, it's like, he doesn't give a shit. Like, does not give a shit about anything that's going on in this place. Because there are so few doctors and there are so few nurses that are helping these people. He's just so overworked and underpaid that it's like he doesn't even care anymore. Mm-hmm. And you can tell just by looking at him. So Baldini sits down with this doctor. So this doctor's name is Dr. Jesse Fear. Shit you not, that's his real name. So he sits down with Dr. Fear. He sounds like some sort of fucking, like, evil... mastermind or something from like a right? Yeah, cackling and like twisting his mustache. Clean shaven, no mustache. Surprisingly enough, you would think. Because you would think, you know, he didn't have a mustache and, you know, he'd be hiding something. Yeah. You know, they say that people who have facial hair, like, they're hiding some sort of imperfection or whatever, like you have an overbite or whatever. Oh, grow a beard, you know.
Yeah.
Not so easy for women. But men do it sometimes. So yeah, anyway, I don't know. I was expecting Dick Dastardly and I got this guy. So these people are being classified as mentally disabled. Essentially, they're not mentally disabled. They're just there because the state is making money off them. That's really the only reason why they're there. There is no real level of care at Pennhurst at this time. The residents, a lot of them are strapped to their beds for large portions of the day without the opportunity to move around. They're often left to fend for themselves for long periods of time. Because they're forced to live for themselves, you know, just alone for long periods of time, they're not getting bathed, they're not being taken to the bathroom, they're not having diapers changed, so they're just sitting in their own excrement. They have no ability to get food, they have no ability to get water because they're tied to their bed. They're sometimes even beaten by staff members. So, I mean, this doctor that Baldini spoke with, he kind of danced around the issue like, oh no, you know, none of our staff ever hit anybody, you know, whatever, that never happens. And there was kind of an awkward moment where you come to the realization, like, in your own mind, like, holy shit, they were beating people, too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just crazy. At this point in time, Pennhurst employs 9 medical doctors and 2 psychiatrists who are expected to care for 2,800 people. 2,800 people. So a lot of these people, they're not even seeing a psychiatrist.
Right.
They're not even seeing a medical doctor regularly. Because these people, like, if the doctors legitimately were trying their hardest to get around and see everybody, there's still no way that they would be able to perform everything that they, you know, they wouldn't be able to do everything they needed to do to care for these people. Right. There's just no physical way to do it. In 1968, Pennhurst allows 75 cents per day to care for 2,800 people. 75 cents per day. The actual allotment is a little more than $5, but the administrative fees are also expected to come out of that budget. So by the time they take everything else out, it's 75 cents. So you can just imagine. In 1968, only 7% of residents are enrolled in rehabilitative programs due to the lack of funding. Animals at the zoo are more cared for. I mean, Baldini talks about the numbers, and he says, you know, the animals at the zoo are actually getting better treatment than the people who are in this asylum. At this point, the hospital is essentially a relic. The lead paint is peeling from the walls. There are leaking, rusty pipes jutting from holes in the walls, like open wounds. It's just disgusting. Baldini spent hours compiling evidence that would eventually aid in the shutting down of Pennhurst 20 years later, and only slept for between 3 to 4 hours per night at the station. He lost his voice and was so exhausted he almost collapsed. His final report, part four, you can find this stuff on YouTube. If you go to the blog, hauntheads.wordpress.com, I have all the links in there, so you can go and check that out. That final report, that part four, actually had to be read on air for him because he was not physically able to go in and read it. The evidence that Baldini uncovered was chilling, and it sounds remarkably like Geraldo Rivera's expose on Willowbrook. I don't know if you've ever seen that one. The Last Great Disgrace, I think it's called. That's also on YouTube. I also posted the link in the blog for that one. And that's another asylum that was plagued with budget cuts and was accused of ill treatment of its patients on Staten Island in New York. I mean, ultimately, this place would give anybody the chills. Even when it was open, people didn't want to go to work. They didn't want to go in there because it was horrible. The halls were once filled with the sounds of patients yelling, howling, kicking their bed frames while their feet remained strapped down. Some of the residents at Pennhurst, those who spent the majority of their lives on these wards, died there. And their energy remains in this place. For whatever reason, that's just where they're left now. They call out, they touch those brave enough to wander the halls. They likely wonder why they were left to rot in this place, 25 miles outside of town, where they could be just forgotten like so much human garbage. So I have a breakdown of the particularly haunted locations at Pennhurst. I'm reading the second half of my article with some disdain, because they've essentially turned this place into a haunted attraction. I'm not a fan of that idea. I understand that we all have a calling in life. And for some of us, that calling is finding a really fucking creepy place and turning it into a haunted house and making $1 million our first year. I get that. I understand that that might be a dream for somebody. I also understand that it was a dream for many of these residents to get the fuck out of this place. And they never had the opportunity to do that. So now their souls are trapped there, and there's all these people running around in costumes, you know, pretending to be monsters or whatever and scaring people. I don't know. It just doesn't jive with me. I just don't like it. I don't know what your two cents.
I just let them rest. They had such a horrible life. They need to find a way to go and to be at peace and at rest.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's nice to exploit that.
Yeah. I mean, I remember doing something about that one house in Cheer City, USA, the mansion, and they open up the basement because the basement is supposedly the most haunted place in the whole house for Halloween every year. And they let people walk through. You remember that one?
I do, sort of.
I don't remember the name of the mansion.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they would open up the basement every year for Halloween, and it's like, well, Yeah, but why? Why? You know, it just doesn't, it doesn't make any sense
to me. The green speaks.
I guess. I guess. I just, yeah, it just, it makes me sick to think about doing that. Like, my dream job, one of my dream jobs would be to find, like, an old warehouse and turn it into, like, a multi-story haunt. Like, a huge haunted house that you could go and you could walk through and get lost in and get the shit scared out of you. I would love to do that. That would be fantastic. I would do that in an abandoned warehouse that was not purportedly haunted. You know, I mean, of course there's going to be whispers about this and that and the other thing, but I would not go into an asylum that I knew for a fact had been inhabited by so many people who were tortured.
Right.
Okay, so there's an, here's another story from Dr. Fear. Okay. Dr. Fear had a patient that hit another one of his patients and damaged the back of his head. So Dr. Fear walks into the cafeteria one day and he sees this guy standing up front waiting for his food, whatever. And he goes over to him and he says, "Hey, did you hurt my patient?" And the guy's like, "Yeah." And Dr. Fear is like, "Well, you're not going to want to do that again, because if you do, I'm going to deal with you." Okay. So it's one thing to say that. So Dr. Fear takes it a step further. He goes to a nurse on the ward, and he says, "I need to give this patient a shot. I don't necessarily want to hurt him, but what's the most painful shot that we can give him that won't cause him any long-lasting effects?" So they find this shot, and they hold the guy down on a gurney, and they give him this shot. And he's howling and crying out in pain, and they're forcibly holding this man down and giving him this shot.
What was it?
Don't know. He didn't say. But the entire time he's sitting there and he's talking to Bill Baldini, and the camera is right on his face, and he's literally smirking. And I just...
What a sick man.
Like...
What happened to him in the end?
The Dr. Fear? I hope to hell he had his license revoked.
I hope so, too.
I mean, if that's the way you're going to treat people... I mean, I understand that shit happens like that in asylums. People get injured. Especially if you're going to be working in an asylum that's so overcrowded that there's no real way for you to organize or control people. I understand that these types of things are going to happen. Apparently this guy hurt another patient on purpose. If that happens, you would think that some form of, like, segregation or, like, additional therapy or something would be done, but nothing quite so physically jarring as holding him down on a gurney and giving him a shot that he doesn't need. Apparently it was not something that was going to affect him at all. So I don't even know, like, I don't, maybe they filled it up with, like, saline or something and give, like, I don't know. But apparently he was like, "Find me the biggest needle that you have and we'll give this guy a shot. And he'll learn, basically, not to mess with my patients, but by extension, not to mess with me."
Right.
Yeah. So torture was the solution. That's Pennhurst, yo. I bet you're sad that it shut down. Jesus Christ. Okay. All right. So some of the most haunted locations at Pennhurst. First one is Limerick. These are all different wards on the property. It was 112 acres, and then it expanded to be, like, thousands of acres. And they added more buildings as time went on. I think they were supposed to add a certain number, and they only added a portion of those buildings in the first place. So, but there are a lot of buildings that you can still go into with this particular haunted experience that I'm going to talk about a little later. So, in Limerick, you might experience full-bodied apparitions. You'll get ultra-clear EVPs, electronic voice phenomena. Experience EMFs, electromagnetic fields, surges, and actual physical contact with spirits. In Philadelphia, again, you're going to get EVPs, EMF surges. You might see orbs. You could see full-bodied apparitions or shadow people. And visitors have also reported being hit by thrown items. So they're physically throwing things. over there. At Quaker, hot and cold spots can be felt throughout Quaker Hall, coupled with the strong sense of being watched. EMF surges are common, but Quaker is said to be the spot to get a, quote, Class A EVP.
Okay.
Ghost hunters have captured images of a little girl roaming the halls, and one investigator has been scratched while being inside. And then last but not least is Mayflower. Mayflower is a building on this particular, on the Pennhurst campus that you can go into and actually investigate. It is not a haunt. So they basically just left this building alone. They cleaned it up a little bit and they basically left it alone and said, if you want to go and have a unique paranormal experience, you can go here, you can bring your equipment, whatever, you can take pictures, and you can kind of see what a little bit of what life was like for these people while they were living there. There's also a little bit of a museum in there. So they have different things that they found throughout the hospital and they've put them in there. So, I mean, it's kind of a nice way to honor the people that were there. But simultaneously, they're also, you know, like running all of these. Yeah, so I don't know. I feel like the point is moot at this point. So the Mayflower building seems to also be quite the paranormal hotspot. The ghost of a little girl can be seen darting in and out of the corners of each floor. It seems like she follows those keen to investigate, so if you're really looking for ghosts, you're going to find one. The ghost of a man is seen sitting in the common room. There are also whisperings of a nurse who gives invisible shots.
Uh-oh.
Guests report feeling a pinching sensation as they explore. Pennhurst is an experience and not one that you will soon forget. So as far as the haunt is concerned, in 2010, the main building was reopened as the Pennhurst Asylum Haunted House. It's been quite a controversial development for both, you know, locals and people who were previously employed there, of course. If I worked there as a nurse and I found out that the place that I worked, that, like, of course it's going to be haunted. Like, what do you... Of course there's going to be energy left behind. Like, you know what happened there, right? But yeah, so these people who were employed there as caregivers, some of the doctors that were employed there, the psychiatrists that were employed there, they were really against this place being opened again as a haunt. So it's $99 for paranormal investigators to thoroughly explore the admin building and a few of the tunnels underneath connecting the other buildings. In a lot of the asylums, they have tunnel systems underneath that connected the various buildings so that in the wintertime they could more easily navigate. They could bring laundry around. You know, they could deliver meals. They could do maintenance. They could do any number of things just to be able to be inside in a heated environment versus going outside and freezing your ass off in a snowbank. So now the ghost hunter in me wants to, like, lock and load.
Right.
And, like, get into the buildings and see what's up and figure it out. There's a part of me that really wants to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm itchy thinking about it. But there's also a little voice inside my head that is telling me that Pennhurst isn't just some spooky haunted attraction. It's a place where people lived, and it's a place where people died. The average stay for children at Pennhurst was 21 years. And some of those people never left. They died there. Some of them didn't even remember what life was like before Pennhurst because they were sent there as infants and toddlers. They could request to be released, but more often than not, the court would deny that request and insist that they remain there because money.
Mm-hmm.
It was a horrible place filled with suffering. Should we really be dressing up in costumes and scaring people in a place that was a pit of despair for so many people? For $20, you can choose one of the haunts to explore. So there's four, I believe. So you can choose which one you want to go into. And then the ticket prices go up from there. But what's the real cost of turning this place into a haunted attraction? And I guess that's the question that I'm asking myself. So if any of you guys out there have visited Pennhurst, either for the paranormal experiences or if you've gone through any of the haunts, I'd be curious to know your thoughts on them. So please let us know on Twitter. Tweet us at Hauntheads. Shoot us an email, hauntheadscast@gmail.com, and let us know. Because I would personally like to know if anybody's had any experiences there.
That would be neat to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. That was a sad story.
It was a very sad story. But as I was doing research on different places, I kind of felt like it was a story that needed to be told. Mm-hmm. You know how, like, you go through, like, your list of stuff? Like, I keep a list of stuff that I eventually want to talk about. Mm. And I save it on Facebook, and I'll save it, like, in my web history and shit like that. And I'll go back through, and I'll be like, yeah, you know, that's really cool. I'm going to do that one, because that seems like it's going to be a lot of fun and whatever, and... You know, there's a lot of additional research that I could do, and I could pull all this different shit in, and it'll, you know, it'll be really interesting. And then this one was really just a straightforward, like, this was a terrible place, and now they've turned it into a haunted house. And I think ultimately the sense of human darkness in it is what drew me to it.
Yeah.
So... I might have to put a trigger warning on this episode. Maybe don't listen to it at work because it might make you cry. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, there were times when I was reading through this stuff and was weepy. Because it's, I mean, you know, from a person who has had experiences with mental health in her life. My mother was bipolar. I've had other family members who have gone into treatment. I've had family members that have had electroshock therapy. You know, I have had family members that have dealt with Alzheimer's and, you know, dementia. And, you know, it's just so terrible. The disease in itself is terrible. The affliction in itself is terrible. But when you take that and you add it to this building... That's just so awful. And just, I can't, you know, it hurts my heart to think about it.
Yeah. It's very sad.
That's where I am. Right now.
Well, it's probably a good thing I'm going next, because mine's a little more lighter.
There you go. We'll end on an uptick.
Yeah. All right. So now, The Wanderings of Honest Abe. Abraham Lincoln, our 16th president, may be long gone from this earth, or is he?
Da, 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 da.
As we all know from our history books, Abe was killed on April 14th, 1865. But did you know he had a premonition about his death 3 days earlier? This is what he told an unnamed source about his dream. Later I found out who the source was, but I forgot to write it down. So anyway, I quote, "About 10 days ago, I retired very late. I was weary and began to dream. There seemed to be a death-like stillness about me. Then I heard subdued sobs, as if a number of people were weeping. I left my bed and wandered downstairs. There the silence was broken by the pitiful sobbing, but the mourners were invisible. I went from room to room. No living person was in sight, but the same formal sounds of distress met me as I passed along. I saw a light in all the rooms. Every object in the room was familiar to me. But where were all the people who were grieving, as if their hearts would break? I was puzzled and alarmed. What could be the meaning of all this? Determined to find the cause of state of things, so mysterious and no..."
And Mimi can't read her handwriting.
I can't.
So, and it was so neat.
And so... something. I kept on until I arrived at the East Room, which I entered. There I was met with a sickening surprise. Before me was a catafalque, which is like the dais that you lay somebody who's dead on.
Oh.
On which rested a corpse wrapped in funeral vestments. Around it were stationed soldiers who were acting as guards. And there was a crowd of people gazing mournfully upon the corpse, whose face was covered, others weeping pitifully. "Who is dead in the White House?" I demanded of one of the soldiers. "The president," was his answer. "He was killed by an assassin." Then came a loud burst of grief from the crowd, which woke me from my dream. I slept no more that night, and although it was only a dream, I have been strangely annoyed by it ever since. Apparently, this part that I just read to you, he had written in a letter to this guy, I can't remember his name now. Coincidence or sign? I know in my life I have had experiences of deja vu or premonitions about something that occurred later on. The ghost of Abraham Lincoln is still felt at the White House. Eleanor Roosevelt is said to have felt the presence of Abraham's ghost. She felt him quite often in her study. Eleanor's study used to be Abe's bedroom. It is also said that Winston Churchill was staying at the White House and was getting out of the tub when he saw a ghostly image of Lincoln staring at him. It is said that he ran out of the bathroom with nothing on but a towel, and that also changes in some tellings of it, that he was naked or
Well, I mean, let's be honest. How many times in his life do you think that Winston Churchill found an excuse to run naked through the right. White House? I'm thinking a few.
And he also had Winston. A cigar hanging from his mouth. Other people have seen Lincoln's ghost watching out the windows of the White House. Another place that Abe's presence is still felt is Ford's Theater. People often hear gunshots and thumping. People have also seen Abe and his wife in the balcony where he was shot. An anonymous person is said to have seen Mrs. Lincoln on the balcony pointing towards the stage as if shouting, "He shot the president!" Lincoln, who has also been seen in Springfield, Illinois, where he was buried. Mary Todd, Abe Lincoln's wife, was known as a Victorian spiritualist. She was known to have seances and mediums over at the White House on several occasions. She began these when their son Willie died. She started having seances and stuff when her son Willie died, and Abe would actually sit on them. And he was very skeptical,
right.
But he entertained her in these. After Abe died, Mary went to a well-known spirit photographer by the name of William Mumber, M-U-M-B-E-R. He took a picture of Mary sitting in a chair, all dressed in black, and standing behind her is a ghostly, mistly, you know, he looks like mist, image of Abe with his hands on her shoulders. It's actually a really neat picture.
Yeah, I've seen that picture.
Could Lincoln still be with us? At least in some way?
Yeah.
It's also, I only read this in one little article that Michelle Obama had always felt like Lincoln was there. She would hear noises under the beds. And it always seemed to, for Michelle, that it seemed to happen around the beds. That was just in one blurb that I read. So who knows if that's true or not. But
yeah.
So there's our Abe. He's still hanging around, and I'm sure he's very unhappy about the events.
Well, you know. Yeah, when I was in Houston, I went to the National Funeral History Museum, or the National Museum of Funeral History, something like that. Anyway, it's the national one. And they had a death mask of Abe Lincoln.
Cool.
So you could actually go and see, and you can see, like, where his eyelashes were. And, like, they have, I'm pretty sure that they took hair from his head and, like, put it on the mask. Because it looks like it looks like human hair.
Wow.
I don't know how many of those masks were made. But it was very popular at the time that people, you know, would make that death mask. It's kind of a strange keepsake, but it was pretty neat. They had a whole display of, like, a mannequin of Abraham Lincoln in the coffin, you know, and they had, like, photos of the funeral procession and whatever. And then when you turned a little bit to the left, there was a little box sitting on a table, and you could literally look down into the face of Abraham Lincoln. Wow. So it was, yeah, it was pretty powerful neat. Stuff. Yeah. Yeah. They also had stuff there about, like, John F. Kennedy and Richard Nixon. And, you know, I mean, there was a bunch of stuff there about U.S. presidents. They had, like, a whole section.
I wonder what happened to John F. Kennedy's ear if they sewed it back on before he was
I don't know.
Interred.
I mean, I would assume that they probably did the best they could to put it back the way that it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
It's kind of the funeral, you know, director, embalmer's, whatever, job
yeah.
to do that stuff. But yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, they said when Lincoln was shot, the bullet went from the back of his head and lodged in behind his left eye.
Hmm.
That was there, but it destroyed everything going through his left side of his brain. So.
Did you, when you were reading about hauntings in the White House, did you also read about the Black Cat?
I did not read about the Black Cat.
There's apparently a black cat that's seen in the White House when terrible things are going to happen. Oh. Like it was seen, I guess, before 9/11. It was seen before Kennedy was shot.
Do we know whose cat it was?
I don't think so. But that's, I mean, if you wanted to do more, you know, political hauntings, you could do that. I mean, there's, you know, it's a lot of people have passed through that building. There's a lot of history there, so, you know.
Yeah, we went to Washington, but we didn't have time to go into the White House.
Oh, yeah.
So,
can you actually go in?
I think they have tours, or they used
really?
To.
Oh, wow.
I think so.
Huh. It'd be kind of interesting, actually, to go see.
Mm-hmm. So, that's it?
That's it? And that's all there was. For today. There isn't any more. All right, so I guess we will cut it off here. For next time, I believe what we're going to do is read some of the submissions that I've gotten.
Cool.
We started a Reddit account, and people have been sending us their paranormal experiences. So I'll probably, you know, print a whole bunch of those out, and we'll have an episode with just that, kind of like a little mini-sode. All right, so that is it for us for right now. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you have a great day and a great week and whatever.
Peace out.
And as always, stay spooky. Yeah, you know, it's... St. James.